Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore on the line. We're going to talk Memphis Grizzlies and Houston Rockets today. Matt, as Terry Reed says, just reading At Notebook and finished the movie. I'm in one of those moods, but thanks for caring. I'm all good.
She really is the poet of our time.
She is. She does great things on Twitter.
Real quick, we attempted to record this podcast yesterday, and we had technical difficulties. Thanks, Skype. Thanks, Internet. We both agree that the Rose Garden changing their name to the Moda Center sucks.
It's dumb. It's really dumb.
I get the money, but also I'm also kind of like, you're Paul Allen. You have a super yacht. Like, do you need the money if you're Paul Allen and you have a super yacht?
Hey, that thing is not going to gas up itself. It will. It's probably the best yacht in the world. Maybe it does just, like, create its own power source.
There's a story a couple of years ago, Ben Golliver tipped me off on it. Like, Allen got into a lot of trouble for parking his super yacht where he shouldn't.
Yes, I remember that.
What's the extension of first world problems there?
I don't even.
What world is that in?
Yeah, there is no first world there. That's just like, maybe that's like first universe problems.
First universe, something like that. The Pistons have new uniforms. I like them.
Yeah, it says Motor City, right?
Yeah, the Motor City alternates. I like them.
Yeah, why not? The Blazers had Rip City. I like those.
That dark blue color is very in right now with the NBA.
It is very in. Welcome to the Pick and Fashion Podcast.
I'm trying to think. It's Magic Johnson's birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Magic. I did see earlier that people were debating whether or not Magic and Bird were actually very good or whether they were too unathletic. Just know you're all idiots.
Who is debating this?
I saw Nate Jones battling people on this, and God bless him. I love Nate. You love Nate. Good for him for tackling that so I don't have to call people idiots on Twitter.
Yeah, that's crazy talk.
It's just dumb. It's the same things that were said about Larry Bird when he played. They said, oh, he's too unathletic, and he put up like 20, 10, and 6. So that's not bad.
There is something to be said for a skill level that transcends any sort of athleticism that you bring to the table.
Right. Like. And there's also that story of how Larry Bird used to get offended when they'd put a white guy on him to defend him. Because he wanted the best athletes and the best defenders to go against. And he felt like white players weren't that. And so he would legitimately get offended whenever someone who was white defended him.
All sorts of comments to go with that. have you heard of Iman Shumpert's rap response to Kendrick Lamar, to K-Dot?
No. I stopped listening after Troy Hudson's rap career broke my heart. So I don't really listen to NBA players rap. I did listen to Steven Jackson. By the way, do you follow him on Instagram at all?
I don't.
It's fascinating. There are all these, like, ever since Instagram put video on there, there's all these videos of him just, like, talking way too close to the camera and just, like, asking. He's like, it's 1 a.m. I'm working on my shot right now. What are you doing? It's my life, not yours. And, like, it's all this preparation, like, you know, propaganda for his album that's coming out. And he keeps saying, like, I'm the first to ever go from the court to the studio, I guess, and be successful is what he means to tack on at the end of that, because there have been plenty of players, like Chris Webber had a single for a while. I don't know if it was a hit single, but it was when he was on the Kings, and it had God, who did it have? Maybe it had Corrupt on there. But it was played in Sacramento all the time, and so I lived in Sacramento, and so that's why I feel like it was a hit single. But they may have just been playing it to kiss up to him in the town. I'm not quite sure. I know Kobe rapped with, you know, on a track with Tyra Banks and Iverson.
Oh, way before that. B-Ball's Best Kept Secret, man.
Well, sure.
Did you have that album?
Sadly, no, but I had friends who had it.
I had it. I just looked it up on Wikipedia. Released November 15th, 1994. Dana Barros had a track on this thing.
Sure.
Brian Shaw has a track, which I actually had led me to wonder, I may actually have to ask this on Nuggets Media Day and ask Coach Shaw, are you the first NBA coach to have had a published rap track? Because I can't think of anybody else who would have had one.
Other than Doug Moe, I can't think of anybody.
I guess Kid was actually hired before.
Yeah.
And Kid's on this album too. Jason Kidd and Money B with What the Kid Did.
Yeah, no, that.
J.R. Ryder's on this album. You need to buy this thing. J.R. Ryder's on this album, man.
I can only imagine what J.R.'s rapping about. Like kicking pregnant women in malls and whatever else he did at that time.
Who else is on here? Chris Mills is on here.
Chris Mills, actually, that guy's terrifying.
Dennis Scott with a song called All Night Party.
Sure, why not?
Gary Payton. And this may be my favorite. Track 6, Flow On. Cedric Sabalos with Warren G.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, there was Shaq hit, you know, had that Can We Rock with Fushnikins back in the day. But Troy Hudson's the last rapper / pseudo NBA player I listened to. And so I'm sure I'll eventually hear Iman Shumpert's response to something that didn't concern him at all, which I'm sure is fascinating. There was somebody, who was it? Maybe it was Amin Elsan from ESPN. He was tweeting about how Iman Shumpert just tweeted something like, oh, I was in a film session today. I noticed like how little I drive and I'm taking too many jumpers. And he was going off. Amin was going off. He was like, it's been 2 years that you just now saw a film session where you noticed this was a problem.
Hey, I'm just proud that he noticed it. You realize how many players have never had that moment? J.R. Smith has never had that moment.
Oh, God.
Never. That's what I want to see. I want to see a J.R. Smith rap track. That's what I want to see. I don't know hip-hop very well, but I liked Iman's response. I thought it was very good. I was told by Sean Hyken, who I trust is more of a whatever, that yeah, it's more of a whatever.
He's more of a whatever.
that Steven Jackson's better. I've never been impressed with Steven Jackson's verse.
Oh, I actually like his. And he's not even just like a good rapper for an NBA player. Like I think he's just like a solid. He's got solid flow, solid delivery, lyrics or whatever. But I actually like his style.
He may be better in the studio because part of it is I heard him on a radio show where they asked him to freestyle.
Oh. That could not have been good.
And it was painful. I was like, maybe I don't know this well enough, but this does not seem good. But
yeah, apparently,
if you're listening, Steven Jackson, don't be offended. I listen to country.
Oh no, we're already on an Instagram video.
Yeah, already.
Apparently, Elton Brand is amazing. I've never heard him, but apparently he's a lot of NBA players in the past have said, like, no, Elton Brand brings it.
I'm fascinated by Elton Brand because like he's into movies and like he has his own production company and apparently he's good at rapping. Anyway, we should probably talk about.
Sure. I'm sure this conversation is exactly what people tuned in for.
Do you want to start with Houston or Memphis?
Let's start with Memphis. We tried to do that yesterday and my technology did not want us to talk. You surprisingly upbeat about your Memphis offseason report.
Which, of course, like 15 Memphis fans were like, don't you dare jinx us. Don't you dare. And I was like, I told them, I was like, do not worry because they'll lose the first game. And I will proceed to be like, oh, it's going to be a long year because I said that last year and they ended up having their best month in franchise history. So, when I started looking at it, I went down the list of things that they needed. And really the only things that they didn't address were upgrading kind of the depth at the small forward position, and there's only so much you can do because you've got Tayshaun and Quincy Pondexter.
Right.
So there's really not a whole lot you can do there. They got a backup center so that Marc Gasol is not going to die in Kosta Koufos, which is I think he's going to be when I say great, everybody's like, whoa, but I'm like, I mean great for his role. Like Kosta Koufos would be like, oh, hey, they've got a really good backup center so that they're not bleeding and dying with their second unit anymore down low.
Yeah, he was great in his role last year.
Yeah, like Ed Davis and Kosta Koufos as a I would take Ed Davis and Kosta Koufos as like a starting front court on a 35 win team. So as a backup squad, that's totally acceptable.
Sure, I agree with that.
You and I were talking a little bit yesterday about Nick Calathes and about how there's no real way to know how he's going to translate. Like he was great at Florida. That's nice. He was good in Europe for Palatinaikos. Great. But there's no way to tell how he's going to translate. And you mentioned Tony Roden and how he probably needs more burn. And I agree with that.
Yeah. I just think that, I think there is a certain ability to spark off the bench that he has that Klathis just doesn't have. Now, Klathis is also much more reliable. I mean, he can actually hit a jump shot, and he can finish around the basket a little bit, and he's a steady hand, whereas Roten's more of a wild card. But every once in a while, you need that Charlie Day wild card, cut the brakes in the van with all the gasoline and barrels kind of thing going. Like, every once in a while, you need that spark. And I actually just think that Roten is a type of player where I think he can only learn so much on the bench and in limited minutes. I think he's more of a guy you kind of have to let him learn by trial and error out there on the court, and the way for him to get better is really just experience. But that's also very hard to do on a team that has expectations of going deep into the playoffs, which the Grizzlies should have and do have. And I guess you could already say that Jared Bayless is more of their spark plug with his role, especially if he's not like a primary ball handler. You already have that. So I think it's a weird balance. Personally, I would like to see Roden because I think he could mean more for that team, but I get going the other way.
Hey, Mike Conley and Tony Roten together were plus 32.6 per 48 minutes last season. I'm sold.
Hey, done. Why not? Let's do it.
I mean, sure, it was only 16 minutes of time.
Hey, you extrapolate 16 minutes into 2,000, that's still 32. That's still really plus good. 32, yeah.
Looks really good. I hope that he gets time. I don't know. I think that you can – I do think this. I think you can play – and we're seeing this a lot across the league. Like, you can play these combo guard lineups. So if you want to run out Roten, if you're like, well, I'm concerned about somebody to manage the offense, and you say to yourself, well, I'd rather have Jared Bayless. Well, one, you have problems, but two, you know, you can do that. You can run out a Bayless-Roten combo. Or if you're like, well, we think Calathes can actually become a pure point. Well, let's run out Roten and Calathes, and then you've got kind of a traditional pure point and, you know, the wild card Roten. And I think that works okay because, you know, you can't have Tony Allen on the floor for 48 minutes. So, like, get a little expansive with some of your ideas of what you should do. I think it'll be interesting to see what Tayshaun's role in this team will be, just in terms of – I think Poindexter's kind of legitimized himself as a starting point, a small forward. That's going to be a big question for you, for Dave Yeager. And you and I talked about this yesterday about how there's no way for us to judge the hiring of Dave Yeager because we just don't know. We got to see how it works. It could be great disaster.
Yeah, you don't know if he's going to implement a newer or a more sophisticated or just a different offensive mindset with the team to try to make them either less grinded out and maybe a little more free flowing, or maybe he's going to stick with kind of that model that he helped Lionel Hollins kind of mold there. You don't know if he's going to be able to kind of inspire the players the same way Hollins did. I mean, that's one of the reasons Hollins is a good coach. I think he gets a little bit of a bad rap. Hollins is a great coach in terms of motivation. Like, he brought that team together. He understood the mindset they needed. He helped foster that. He helped everyone kind of buy into that. And you just don't know if Yeager's going to be the same way. It doesn't mean that he's going to be worse. I just think it's hard to know, like, exactly where they stack up in the West when they have a brand new coach we've never seen coach before.
Yeah. We talked about kind of ranges for wins on previous podcasts. And I think with the Grizzlies, it kind of works out to, I'd say 48 to 54 is probably where I would put them in a 6-win range. I think they'll win somewhere in there, and that kind of depends on injuries, about how healthy Zach Randolph is and chemistry and all those kind of things. But I think between 48 and 54, I mean, they're going to be a playoff team, I feel pretty certain about. I think that there are teams that could jump them, but I don't feel like they're going to miss the playoffs entirely versus Denver. I feel like could legitimately drop out of the playoff race. I feel pretty confident that with Marcus Gasol, Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, and the role players that they have, that's going to be good enough to get them to 48 at least.
Yeah, I agree. I would honestly be shocked if they won fewer than 50 games. Like, I just think this is such a, and I don't mean this in a degrading way, but this is such a great regular season team that just having to deal with that mentality, that perimeter pressure. Going against their defense, having to figure out how to keep Gasol and Randolph from working inside, you know, the role. Yeah, like that's just when you're on a a third game in four nights or a fourth game in five nights or back to back or whatever, like on in the middle of a road trip. Like that's just, that team is such a pain in the ass to deal with throughout the regular season that I just think that, like, and I'm not saying they're not built for playoff success, because I'm sold over the last couple of years on their ability to win rounds in the playoffs. I still don't think they're a title contender, but I think that they're closer than they were. And I just that team is just, they're built to win in the regular season so well. And I still think they could be they'll probably be around the fifth or sixth best record in the West, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, that can be a difference of two wins between the second or third seed and the fifth or sixth seed.
If you told me that they were the sixth seed and they made the Western Conference Finals, I would not be shocked at all. Like, right. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
Exactly.
Because, you can see them landing in like a 3-6 matchup with the Clippers, knocking them off again, just because they've been those two just go at each other. It's really a coin toss a lot of the time. And then if they land a favorable matchup with the two seed, there's all sorts of indications that they can maybe make a run. Now, I also wouldn't be surprised if they landed as like the six or seven and were ousted in the first round. That wouldn't shock me. But
yeah,
I think that for Memphis, that's a good thing. They're still building. They're building a level of success, and I do like the fact that Hollinger et al., Levy and Hollinger et al. You can tell that the roster is kind of being slowly constructed to where they're not going to fall on hard times when Zebo's legs go out. They're going to probably have the ability to acquire another piece. And the other thing I'm actually kind of getting impressed with, like, Mike Miller is a good example of this. This is somewhere guys want to play now.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big change to be able, we talk about, Zach Lowe had a great piece on Grantland, like he always does, about the Bobcats and about trying to change the culture. This is something that has to be noted for these small market teams. You have to establish yourself as, it's, yes, the culture in the city and everything else matters, and the money is obviously a big deal, but a lot of it also is guys have to feel like if they come there, they're not going into a losing situation. And if you feel like you have an organization that has a history of success, you've got a much better chance in pulling in these free agents and being able to continue, because they're not looking at a true rebuild probably for a while, because Conley and Gasol are going to be good enough to pull them to 35 wins a year.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about a couple of years ago, but it's true. Like
Mark, it really is.
Marc Gasol and Mike Conley really are good enough together to pull this team with any sort of competent backups to something good. Now, there's also the case of Gasol's contract is going to come up and he'll be a free agent, and then we're going to deal with the whole free agent big market. I wouldn't be surprised if Mark went to high school in Memphis. He loves Memphis. Unless I am very bad at reading guys, and I've whiffed on a lot of guys in terms of trying to judge their intentions, I would find it very surprising if Gasol actually did care about market and things like that, because of the way that I've had conversations with him. He's always so focused on the team, and he's always so kind of humble and honored to just be in the situation, and just isn't a real power-hungry dude. But again, I don't really know him. He's dealing with media, so he could be completely jerking my chain. I would be very shocked if he ever left Memphis.
An interesting point. Is, I wonder, is that a European thing? In the sense that you don't often see players want, at least I don't feel like you often see European players really look at market as an important aspect, because I think over there everything's been built up, at least in their, everything's a program into the pros, and it kind of is here too, but over there it's all about like the club, right? Like you get into the club, like the club team early in their lower levels and kind of work your way up. And I think it becomes more about the team than it does like the city in a way. And I'm trying to think of guys that we've seen, like we've seen guys want to go back because they want to be a bigger deal within the construct of the team. But I don't feel like we've ever seen guys kind of bounce around here saying, hey, I want to be in a bigger market. Like, Manu stuck around, Dirk stuck around.
His brother mumble mumble.
But did he really, like?
Yeah, he did.
I disagree. I feel like he wanted to win more than he wanted to be in a big market.
He talks a lot about the things in LA that he likes in terms of the opera and the culture and the society and the place with the Lakers and that whole feeling. He rubbed a lot of people in Memphis the wrong way with kind of how he talked about the differences between the two cities.
But
I think that's something that Mark's been aware of.
That's not anything he did before he got traded. I think that becomes a thing of, is it a leading question?
There's a feeling in Memphis amongst a lot of people that he moped. And I'm not claiming this because I wasn't following close enough attention. But there was a lot of feeling that he was moping those last 2 years of Memphis.
Oh, I'm sure he was. They also weren't – I mean, they couldn't get out of the first round when he made it.
But I think part of this, though, is it's not entirely one thing or the other. It's kind of a combination of things. He might be okay with dealing with kind of the market and everything else of the team was better. But he also, if the market was better and everything, he might be more okay with the situation. We've seen guys in L.A. stick it out just because they're like, whatever, it's L.A.
Right.
So, it's an interesting question. I'm trying to think what else with the Grizzlies is interesting. What do you think Ed Davis' role is this year?
I think it's got to be more than what it was. And just for the simple fact that I don't think he's going to have the same roadblocks of getting through with the coach. Of, you know, like, Hollins was just so against playing him for I don't know, maybe he was protesting the trade or something. It was such a weird situation. Then, like, the comments Ed Davis has kind of hinted at since the end of the season have just been like, you know, I feel like he will have more of an opportunity, and I think he's a guy that needs to play 20 to 24 minutes a night. Like, I think you kind of have to rest Zach Randolph as much as you can.
I get this really weird sense. So I was talking to guys, and multiple times in the numerous – I talked to them a handful of times towards probably between March and May. And guys would randomly bring up Ed Davis in a positive light. Like, the players would be like, you know, he's just got so much talent. He's such a young guy, and he's such a hard worker. Like, you see him in there every day, and he's going to be great here, and we really feel like he can contribute. And then you talk to Lionel – and Lionel would basically say, these guys come from bad teams and they don't know what it takes to win. And it's interesting because it would be like, isn't rebounding and scoring, aren't those things that help teams win? Well, because typically I find that to be helpful.
And he's a pretty decent defender, I find.
Yeah.
I did not like him as a prospect coming out of college.
Me neither.
I was really down on him. And then I watched first couple years in Toronto, I was like, hey, this guy can play. Yeah. Like, he's actually pretty good. Like, maybe I feel like I keep coming up with this with like these guys who I like as third big men. I keep comparing them to Jason Thompson, who hasn't really done anything in the league, but I just love that type of player. But he kind of reminds me of a Jason Thompson type, where I think you put him as the third big on a good team and he just flourishes.
Jason's also, I feel like, those don't let your agent talk you into returning somewhere just for the money. Like,
right.
Like, I don't understand why all these players could demand trade, and yet Jason Thompson sits happily in Sacramento. I kind of want to ask his agent, can you please demand a trade for this poor bastard to get him out?
I really thought he was going to be a guy that ended up, after his like first contract, somehow he was going to end up either on Dallas or San Antonio, and people are going to be like blown away by how good he is.
Yeah. That's like a really interesting point. Like, if I'm Dallas, I would completely trade Vince Carter and Sean Marion's expirings for Jason Thompson and whatever else. I would go do that right now.
Yeah.
And then now they've got two of those guys, because I think Patrick Patterson is a very similar kind of guy. I can't begin to – I was looking at his shooting splits yesterday, and I continue to be like, why in the hell will no one go get this kid? Like, will someone please go save Patrick Patterson? But maybe the Kings will be better and it'll all work out. Anyway, so yeah, Memphis, I think we're on the same page. They'll be good.
How do you think – all right, you mentioned Mike Miller, and really, like, I thought – I was convinced he was going to the Thunder, and then he ends up going back to Memphis, and immediately people who want to naysay, you know, whatever move happens anywhere ever are like, oh, well, he's not healthy, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, he's not healthy, but – you don't need him healthy in the regular season. You just need him healthy enough to contribute in the playoffs. Do you think that he – I mean, it's hard to judge, like, what a guy's health is going to be, especially with a guy who seems to have, like, Velcro attaching his limbs to his body, like Mike Miller does. But do you see him as an actual contributor in the playoffs for them?
In the playoffs, yeah. I think he can do it with Miami, which is sit out the entire year and just play in the playoffs. I don't really know how to overstress this enough. They needed – the Spurs swept them and dominated them. They would have at least made that thing into a six-game series if they had had one guy who could hit two threes in a game. That was all they needed to win two games from San Antonio, was just one guy to hit two threes. And you say, well, what would that have done for them? Well, the difference between a sweep and a six-game loss feels a lot different for your future. A six-game loss is, well, we were right there, but we weren't quite good enough.
Right.
Swept is, oh, crap, we got the stuffing kicked out of us.
Sure. Well, that's the thing is, like, Quincy Pondexter hits a couple of corner threes in the playoffs, and people are like, oh, my God, Quincy Pondexter's so good. And it's like, well, yeah, his ability and value were probably overstated a little bit during that time, but Memphis needed somebody who could hit a corner three. They needed somebody who could stretch the floor.
Anybody that hits playoff shots is going to have their value.
Yeah, but hit, like, you know, his was overstated, but at the same time, like, within the construct of that team, they needed somebody to stretch the floor, and so that's why he seemed like such a revelation, and he is a good role player. But now if you can put two of those guys out there, if you can run Pondexter and Miller out there together for a four-minute stretch here and there in the playoffs, that just opens everything up for Conley, for Gasol, for Randolph. I mean, that's the thing I don't think – I think we're starting to realize more and more is that sometimes it's not about what a player will do, but what a defense thinks a player will do. And people will think Mike Miller's a threat because he is a threat to hit outside shots, and that just changes the way a defense plays against you.
Also, Pondexter shot 40% from three in the regular season and 45% in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's like the one thing that he can do is hit threes, and that's fine. Like Memphis, that's all they need is for a couple of guys to be able to do that. Because the problem, and this is actually – Tony Allen is either underrated or overrated by anyone you speak to. I don't feel like anyone has a really good evaluation of him. Because I don't think it's possible. Because if you watch him – if you watch him and you're focused on offensive skill and polish, you're going to be disgusted, like physically ill from watching him. And if you're focused on defensive effort and ability, you're going to be amazed. And there's no greater disparity in the NBA between, I think, the two for a perimeter player, between a player's skill sets offensively and defensively than Tony Allen.
Here's the comparison that just popped in my head. You tell me how stupid it is. I feel like watching Tony Allen on the court and trying to judge what he does is a lot like when you're playing pinball and you get a second ball introduced into the into the chaos. When you have that multi-ball play at once and you're just hitting the flippers left and right, like just trying to, like, there is a lot of good going on and there's a lot of just like accidental good going on, and eventually you lose them both, and you're like, wow, I can't believe like that fell apart like that when I had so many opportunities. Like, I just feel like he is so chaotic in so many good and bad ways at the same time that it's a lot like pinball with two balls.
You're basically just mashing the button and trying to rack up as many points before you inevitably lose out. That's kind of thing is it's why he's great in these short bursts. I don't mind Memphis fans wanting him to play to close out end of games. But I think in those situations, you have to go offense-defense. And Hollins was almost never going to go offense-defense.
Yeah, he was just going to go defense-defense.
He was really problematic with that, where he was just – he just wanted to maintain, you know, consistency and flow and didn't want to interrupt things. And they really – now they've got the ability to do that. You know, you can put in a lineup that's – like your offensive lineup to close games can be Mike Conley, Mike Miller, Quincy Pondexter, Zach Randolph, Mark Gasol. Or you can go – if you want to, you can go to – like if you're down – if you're down five, you can go to, and you desperately need that three, you can go to a small lineup featuring, you know, Miller and Pondexter and Roden or whoever else and Conley and try and aim for the three and then kind of rework and put Allen back in. But you're going to need to see a lot more of that. Allen also, he makes huge plays offensively when he does. Like some of those times that he'll slash to the basket and get those little layups are just massive. They turn games around, but there's also a lot of times when defenses are potently aware that he can't shoot and play off of him. I think that really hurt him. So I think they've addressed that. They boosted their their play down low in terms of their bench. They've got a lot more depth down there and good rotations. They added some point guards to maybe they found a solution. They at least didn't just sit on Bayless and were like, okay, we'll just go with this. They were active. They made a lot of subtle moves, and I think that's why I walked away kind of being positive about them.
Also, in regards to Tony Allen, he and Ron Artest are the two guys who are probably the most exhilarating 1-on-0 fast breaks in the world because, I mean, it's obviously a flip of the coin of the guy's either going to make it or he's going to miss it, but it's a literal flip of the coin with them. Like, you never know if they're on a breakaway play whether they're actually going to make the shot. It's amazing.
I think J.R. Smith you have to throw in there just because there's a chance that he'll hold the ball up and take a random three.
Or, like, try to toss it off the shot clock to really wow the crowd.
Yeah. So Houston.
Yeah, let's talk about Houston. They did some things.
They did one thing, at least. God, their turnover is nuts in terms of the players that have come and gone. By the way, let's take a moment and commemorate the Thomas Robinson era in Houston.
I'll never forget it.
Maybe Portland's where he turns it around. Maybe this is the place.
I mean, I guess we could give up on a rookie after, or give up on a guy after his rookie season in which he was traded.
We're not giving up on him. There's a difference between giving up on him and dealing with the fact that he has a lot of trouble getting on the floor for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, Keith Smart is, we all know he's just great with rotation, so that's...
You're not letting this go. You will not let this go.
Because it's dumb! It's stupid to be like, oh, I can't believe he didn't get on the floor for Keith Smart.
What about Kevin McHale?
He gets traded a rookie halfway through the year, and he's going to play him 30 minutes a game. Like, no. Like, he was decent in the time he had on the court, but they were also competing for a playoff spot. Like, you're not just going to throw a rookie in there. They were a lot better than we all thought they were going to be going into the year.
It's true. And it would not shock me at all if he came out and was gangbusters this year.
I think he'll be a really nice backup power forward for them, for Portland. Royce White. I mean, it's not like he's Royce White. He's just going to be great in Philly.
Yeah.
He might actually play because they're trying to tank. We might get a lot of Royce White this year. It'll just be like a lot of, what the hell? Put him out there.
I forgot James Anderson was on this team.
Sure.
I was a little surprised they let Carlos Delfino. We'll get to the big stuff in a minute, folks, I swear. I was a little surprised they let Delfino go.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a cap move, right?
I would have thought that they could have gotten him back for, you know, something decent. Maybe Delfino just wanted the money, though. I don't know.
Yeah. He went, where did he go? Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's played there before.
That was another move I couldn't understand from Milwaukee. I'm like, why? Why are you? What does Carlos Delfino do for you? I was like, that was one for both sides. It's like those two people in a relationship where you're like, no, this isn't going to work. And I've been in those relationships where my friends are like, what are you doing? Like, this is clearly not going to work.
You know, I'm sure Tim Olbrich is a nice guy. I don't really believe he exists.
Thank you, because I was just about to say I have no idea who this person is.
I couldn't actually tell you what he looks like. And
I read the name.
I've read the name for I feel like a long time.
And I've never heard of him before this offseason. And it was like, and then it was, oh, Sam Hinkie's really big on Tim Olbrich. And every time I heard it, I thought they were saying Timothy Oliphant.
Oh yeah, I mean, we all know Sam Hinkie, huge into Justified.
Just big fan of Justified. That's what I thought it was. Do you think? Let's work our way up the ranks.
Sure.
So do you think, is it Cannon? I forget, is it Cannon or is it Cannon?
Is it Cannon? I think it's Cannon.
Cannon. Does he play this year? I heard one person telling me that they think that he's going to wind up being either the backup point guard or a starter by the middle of the year. I forget who it was. I think it was a podcast. I think it may have been Chad Ford on ESPN talking about how Cannon was going to wind up in that role. I think they're probably going to do what they did with Aaron Brooks, which is they sent him down to the D-League for a full year and was like, just don't worry about it. I know this seems like you're getting demoted. You're not. Just destroy the D-League. We'll bring you up at the end of the year. We'll work you into the rotation. You'll come in as a backup point guard next year.
Yeah, I mean, if they hadn't re-signed Aaron Brooks and Patrick Beverley, I would think there's absolutely a chance for Cannon to get into that rotation and maybe win the backup point guard job. But yeah, barring an injury, I just don't see the minutes being there for him. I do like him. I mean, he can shoot. I like his shooting stroke. I'm not sure how he'll be a playmaker in the NBA, but I do think that he'll at least be a guy that can spread the floor, which they love to do. But I agree with you. I think that he's a guy who most likely spends a lot of time in the D League just there to destroy it, to get his confidence, and then towards the end of the season, they try to bring him through.
I was kind of, I don't know, these centers, once you get past the age of 35, I start wondering what's the point. Marcus Camby is in that territory where I'm kind of like, look, do you really want to put your backup center position? I know that the guy is chic. We'll see how that works out. But do you really want to put this, I guess, third reserve, your third big man, really, with a guy that may not be able to go at all?
Yeah, they've got Monchunas, they've got Greg Smith that they can throw there. So I guess Camby isn't that. Camby's probably just a luxury item. Like, yeah. He's seat warmers in your car. Like, you don't need him. But if you have him, like, that's great. He'll keep your keister warm.
Does this make Omri Caspi a spoiler?
I would say like a. I would say he's more like a like just a straight transmission problem.
Or is Omri Caspi? That makes Reggie Williams the cup holders in the back seat, right?
Yeah, he's definitely cup holders in the back seat.
Where you're like, oh, neat.
Yeah. Omri's probably like the GPS that never actually works. That's what I feel like. Like, you're glad he's there just in case something happens, but most likely you know that you're going to get lost.
Right.
After the first 2 months of Omri Caspi's career, I thought this guy was a player. And then I think people figured out that he can't really shoot or dribble or really defend. But other than that,
solid player.
Yeah, really nice.
Maybe the best thing going for Cannon is the fact that Aaron Brooks manages to always find his way out of playing time.
Yes.
He has a mutant ability to play his way out of playing time.
It's really impressive.
Because, like, teams keep signing him, and then just, it's like Aaron Brooks is playing, like, 10 minutes a game, and then, like, slow, like, oh, Aaron Brooks only got 7. Oh no, Aaron Brooks hasn't played in 15 games. Oh,
you know, looking at this roster construction, Reggie Williams might actually get some pretty decent time.
Yeah, I mean, they need shooters. He's a shooter.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty lean. That's part of the thing is they're
They had to gut.
You know, and they didn't get a bunch of the like great veteran guys going to play for a contender on the cheap yet.
I think that's a year away, right? Because I think people are going to want to see, is Dwight Howard back to being Dwight Howard, and how does this all fit together?
Okay, the big question, who starts at power forward?
I would start Donatas, personally.
You want Donuts as starting? Okay.
Yeah, I would start him. I think that's the nicest way to kind of complement Dwight within the construct of what they do. The Ashik thing has to be worked out. Like, I know that there's not a rush to deal him, and you can probably deal him sometime during the season, but you can't pretend that these guys can, one, play together, or to, like, this is like a I gotta be careful with how I choose my words here. This is like a beefed up version of when David Kahn said that, like, Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio could play together in the same backcourt. Like, you are not putting Ashik and Dwight in the same front court for more than, like, 3 minutes a game.
I mean, you can throw it out there if a team is foolish enough to try and go big at you. If a team is like, let's throw out two bigs to try and attack Dwight, then you can counter with Ashik and be like, let's see who wins that match. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
But in general, yeah, I agree with you. Anybody that's got a stretch four, you can't play those two together.
Exactly.
Anybody that's got a – and we're talking like the Spurs, you can't play them against.
Right.
So,
like, you can't do that against any contender.
Right. I kind of feel like I want Greg Smith to start just because I feel like he works the hardest, but I don't necessarily like his fit with Howard as well. So I think I'm kind of with you. I think it's got to be either Donuts or Terrence Jones, depending on how the whole homeless man stomping thing works out.
I shouldn't
laugh. That's why I missed a meter, so it's not like he's going to miss any time.
Right. I shouldn't laugh at that, because that's a horrible thing. Big if true.
The whole stomping a homeless man thing is kind of, you know. It's funny from the perspective of, what is wrong with you? Like, what is, you know? But maybe he didn't do it. He's also played innocent, so.
Yeah. I think that Terrence Jones is, like, I've never been big on him. I'm still not big on him. But within what they like to do and putting him next to Dwight, I could see him being the starting four, you know, halfway through the season. Like, I really am not crazy about his game. I don't like it, but he does kind of fit that stretch four that they would want to put next to Dwight.
He's surprising in that he's got an okay three-pointer because he really has worked on it. It's like he doesn't take them off the dribble very often, which is good.
Yeah.
And he attacks the rim enough, so he's kind of – we were worried about him being Josh Smith-like, but he doesn't do it off the dribble yet.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes it okay with me.
Right. Well, I guess they re-signed – did they re-sign Francisco Garcia?
Yeah, they got him back on the cheap, too. He re-signed for 1.2.
Yeah, I guess he'll play over Reggie Williams. Maybe they don't need Reggie as much as I think.
Cisco re-signed for the veteran minimum, which wouldn't have surprised me a year ago because I thought nothing of Francisco Garcia, but he played really well in Houston. I was kind of surprised he came back for the veteran then.
Yeah.
Does Jeremy Lin, do you think – well, some of this we'll have to cover in our preseason stuff, but do you think Jeremy Lin finishes the year with the Rockets?
Yeah. Why not? I think Lin will be solid this year. Like, I think he's a starting NBA point guard and with this team. Like, I think he'll – I'm a little worried – well, it'll be a lot like playing with Jameer Nelson. He's not so much a post-entry passer.
Not so much.
But I think you can really kill in the pick and roll. Wait, Dwight doesn't like playing the pick and roll. Never mind.
No, he does now. Remember, he said that he was really excited about playing the pick and roll with James Harden.
Oh, right.
Like, you wonder how much of this really was just he hated Kobe. I mean, really, a lot of this, I'm wondering, was just I hate Kobe.
God, now I actually care about the story. Now that he's signed and there's no, where's Dwight going to go? Now I actually care about what happened and, like,
it's kind of
the fallout of it all.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, you know, they're going to bill Houston versus LA just because Dwight left the Lakers, blah, blah, blah. But it's kind of fascinating just from the specific stories of the people that said different things. Like, you wrote a post a couple weeks ago about how D'Antoni was talking about how basically he didn't play Powell because of politics.
Right.
Like, they had to feature Dwight, which makes you wonder, was Dwight like, I don't want to play next to Powell? Like, it leads to all sorts of really interesting questions. The fact that this is something that a Lakers blog, I forget who mentioned it though, was saying that so when Steve Nash criticized Dwight for his play, that was the moment where you really have to be like, because Steve never goes after a guy, just doesn't do it.
No, that is definitely a point. I can't wait. I mean, Phil Jackson had the last season. I can't wait for Mike D'Antoni's book. I signed up for what?
That's fantastic. How do James and Dwight fit together?
I actually like it. I like it a lot. I think James is one, a willing passer, even like post entry. I think if Dwight does buy in and they play a pick and roll together, that's murder. Like,
does Harden throw a lot of lobs?
I think he throws a fair amount.
Can he throw the off the pick to the elbow, the defenders? You know, they hedge on him, go for the double, he lobs to Dwight, rotation man, slow, Dwight slams it home. Can he make that pass?
Yeah, well, going left, I know he can make that pass. Going right, I'm not sure. I think he can. Like, I think he's a guy that can throw a pass at pretty much any angle. Mm-hmm. I think he can complete that play, especially going left. Going right, I'm not positive.
Chandler Parsons is going to shoot a ridiculous percentage next year.
He is on a that second round pick is that is a way to build your team.
Did they get that from Minnesota?
He was part of like the quote unquote like oh crap, we need to pay Kurt Rambis the last 2 years of salary. Yeah, he was one of the picks that Donuts ended up being one of those picks too, as they moved down. He was the pick. Houston had them pick Donuts, and then traded him, and then traded Brad Miller and a pick for Johnny Flynn and Donuts.
Oh wow!
Yeah, great job, David. Great as usual.
That's all you can really say.
I think Norris Cole was also one of those picks.
What's the ceiling for this team? And again, we'll have to go over, we had to go over a lot of this in 2 months, but what do you think is the ceiling for the Rockets? What's a win total? Like, if we're doing that number, if we give them a 6-7 range, what are we looking at?
What did they win last year? They won 45 games last year. I mean, I don't think 55 is out of the question. I think like 53 to 57 wins is probably their range. I just assume that Dwight is going to be good. Like,
do they win more? Can they win 60?
First year, probably not.
Yeah.
I'm
probably going to say 50 to 57. I put wider ranges on these things.
Oh God, what if they go out and get LaMarcus as the third guy?
Well, then everything changes.
That would be fun.
I always worry about personalities, but in general, yeah, it'd be fantastic.
Would you, let's say it's a Sheik, would you trade a Sheik and Chandler Parsons for LaMarcus Aldridge?
Ooh.
It's hard because Chandler's one, very good, and two, he's on such a great contract, but would you, if you're Houston, could you see yourself pulling that trigger?
I think you have to get one of the you're going to think this is irrelevant, but I think you have to get whichever the power forward looks the best at the time. I think you have to get one of those two.
Okay.
I think if you're Portland, you need, you know, Terrence Jones, so he can revisit his lovely time with the homeless community there.
Sure.
Or Donuts, or Greg Smith. You need one of those guys.
If Terrence Jones did this crime, and then got traded to Portland, and like they were like, whatever, like you're just gonna, like you're our guy now, you're one of our players, we're gonna have you. Do you think like immediately Bonzi Wells starts doing sit-ups and thinks like he's got to come back?
Forgotten completely about Bonzi Wells. That name had just vanished from my name. You know, Terrence is from Portland. That's why he's out there.
Yeah.
So he would probably be accepted pretty quick.
Yeah, that's true.
He'd
just have to like show up with like kale. Just bring some kale. He'd be accepted right away.
That's tough, man. I don't know. I think you're gonna have to get picks in it too. That's the thing, is like LaMarcus. The problem with a Sheik, I think, is that a Sheik, it has a lot of financial value, but he's also got good player value, but not elite player value. So then it starts being how much is too much for LaMarcus Aldridge, and then that gets really complicated.
That's true.
Because Parsons, you're giving up Parsons, you're giving up a guy that does so much.
Yeah. But if the goal is to have a big three, yeah, I'm not sure what I would do if I were Houston in that scenario. But like, you're clearly getting the best player in the trade. But you know, the whole thing now is having a big three and putting guys around them. Except you're giving up like the cheap guy that you can put around them. At least for, I don't know how Parsons has like what, one more year after this.
Yeah, and then you have to pay him a massive.
Yeah, and then you got to pay him a big bump. So maybe you're getting out of that early.
He had 152 of 395 threes last year.
That's not terrible.
And the problem is, it's like, I mean, here's his per 36, okay? His per 36 is 15.54.
And he shot, like 48% from the field, 47, something like that?
49% from the field, 39% from three. Able to drive, long defender, only getting better, was a huge part of the recruiting of Dwight too.
Yeah, it doesn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, it's tough, man. Like, his value is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and you have to start like kind of figuring out like how much of a raise you're willing to give him. Will he take a discount? Like, you're getting into that zone of like, you know, all right, we have a chance to get our big three here. And I think that, you know, I think LaMarcus pairs beautifully with Dwight.
This is irrelevant because what's going to end up happening is the Nets are going to trade their next 15,000 draft picks for him. God, that's tough, though. That's a really interesting question to see. You know, Portland would have to, I think, be pretty desperate to move him for anything less than – that's the thing is I don't even know how much is too much for LaMarcus Aldridge, who might be the best power forward in the league.
He's not.
He might be. He's up there on the list. Like, you can make an argument for him.
I think it's a pretty weak argument.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's significantly behind a couple of guys.
Why?
Because I just don't think he is as good a defender as he needs to be, and he's not much of a rebounder. Like, he got 9 a game last year, and it was like, oh, look, he's rebounding now. Like, for an elite guy, like, I just think that... I think he's top 5 for sure, but...
I'm gonna send this podcast to Ben Golliver, and he's going to put it on Blazer's Edge, and then I'm going to say goodbye to your Twitter mention.
Oh, hell, like, I haven't dealt with you guys before. Bring it on, Portland!
I don't know. I always get confused by rebounding percentages because they always look better to me than they actually are. He had a career high 14% for rebounding rate last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's solid. Like, you know, Chris Bosh had a 14 rate and people killed him.
And Kevin Love in 18 games had a 23% true rebounding rate.
That was with one hand.
Yeah, his numbers are pretty crazy. 2012, he went down to 19. That was weird.
Hey, Nikola Pekovic doing something. 5 years, $60 million.
Finally done.
5 years, $60 million. I'll take that. 12 a year, and they can still give. Yeah. They could still technically give Rubio the 5 year extension.
I always put it on. There's the Beasley line of crazy for these guys that are wild and erratic, and then for promising big men and centers, it's the JaVale line. They got him. They're paying him $1 million more a year than the Denver Nuggets are paying JaVale McGee.
Yeah,
that's fine. That's totally okay.
I'm digging it. So how about that?
Good. Good for them. Breaking news.
Breaking news.
They'll be up like 3 hours after you will hear at least 3 hours after this happened.
Good.
Well, we should go right on that. This has been fun.
Yes, this has been fun.
So,
what do you give the Rockets? Rockets, they have to be an A, right?
I'm going to give them an A-.
Okay.
Because I don't – you have two questions with Dwight. You have the health.
Sure.
And you have him being an ass clown.
Sure.
So you have those two factors that I think impact the signing. And then I was really surprised that they didn't beef up more with the shooters. They got a bunch of value guys, which is great, and it may work out awesome for them. But I still want to see how Reggie Williams, Francisco Garcia, Patrick Beverley, who's really only was relevant for a year, how these guys fit in with Houston and whether they're able to maintain the same level of offensive production that they were last year. I want to see how Harden and Dwight work together. They gambled everything on Dwight Howard, which is a great gamble, no question about it, and it's worthy of an A. But because they didn't land another guy that I was like, ooh, that was awesome, that I'm going to hold off and give him an A-.
Yeah, I think we still have to see what they do with Ashiq. Maybe even what they do with Lynn.
Yeah, they're a work in progress. But for the first year, it's an A-.
What do you think? I know he's a little bit bigger, but what are the odds that, like, give me a percentage? The odds that Patrick Beverley is just Tyronn Lue 2.0.
35%.
Okay, that's fair. I was gonna say like 30-ish. So yeah, I like that.
I give him 35% because, you know, I think the players fade out easily enough in this league that's entirely possible. There's a 20% chance that, I don't know what the comparison would be, but he's like a lockdown dude, so
yeah,
different. Probably the majority's in the middle, but I don't know, they're gonna be a lot of fun to watch next year. They were a lot of fun to watch this year. I don't know, here's a good question: are they gonna be more fun or less fun to watch than they were last year?
More fun. Have you seen Omer Sheik try to catch a pass?
But their offense was amazing. By the way, Zach has a piece on wolfamongwolves.com right now that you should go look up about Kevin Martin that completely turned around kind of my opinion of the Timberwolves.
Hey, thank you.
I knew that they were going to be pretty good. I've had them penciled in as a playoff team. But the whole fact of even if they're bad defensively, they're still going to be so good offensively, it's not going to matter, really made an impact with me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I kind of was looking over the video and I was like, yeah, he sucks on defense, but my God – the offensive numbers, whenever he's on the floor, are pretty good wherever he goes.
Right.
So, and the big thing for me was the turn of seeing that lineup in 2010, 2011 that Houston was so successful with, which was Kyle Lowry, Kevin Martin, Chase Budinger, Luis Scola, and Chuck Hayes. And it's like defensive point guard, two inconsistent wing defenders, a guy who can score at power forward who isn't regarded as a defender, and a guy who can push people around but isn't a shot blocker on defense in the middle. Hey, that sounds like a lineup the Wolves can throw out there.
Well, also, I think a lot of it was, I think, kind of looking at it, people jump to this thing of, well, defensively, that's great for the regular season, but what about the playoffs? And your point is, like, who cares? They're going
to
make the playoffs.
Yeah,
like,
just get to the playoffs, and then they'll figure that out.
I think it's amazing because everyone's like, well, they can't win a title with this. And it's like, well, no, they can't win a title because LeBron. Like,
right. And if they had re-signed Kirilenko for a good contract instead of bringing in Kevin Martin to play, like, they're still not winning a title.
They're still not winning a title. Right. So, hey, you know. But, yeah, I think that was really good. I posted about Justin Bieber today, so you should definitely go read that.
Yes, you did.
I posted some crap today.
You really did. I saw that late last night, and I thought, I'm just going to leave that for Matt because I'm a jerk. Because I knew you would post it, and I was just like, I don't feel like being a nice person right now.
So I did Justin Bieber and the Magic Johnson thing. What else? I did the Detroit uniforms. I did Amari's judging the Miss
USA pageant. Yes, that was the one. That was the one I was just trying to pick up.
I just did so much crap this morning, but I don't really care because it's August and we can get away with that. So
I a video about Kobe in a chopsticks competition. I did that one.
We got some great analysis up on CBS Sports.
We do. We have all of your August news.
All right, Zach, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Matt.